2020 was a year that had us all going, what next? In the wake of severe bushfires, the American elections and a global pandemic, many people joked that it was probably about time that aliens landed on Earth. Chris Infy is a distinguished professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona. He's penned 8 popular science books and has even taught cosmology to Tibetan monks. And he joins the show now to discuss UFOs and the possibility of alien life on Earth. Good afternoon, as it is there, Chris.
Yes, it's good to be with you.
You too. I very much enjoyed your article in The Conversation. And you make the point that scientists don't deny the existence of intelligent aliens, but they set a high bar for proof.
Right. I think, actually, we don't. It's not that we don't deny the existence. We don't deny the possibility or maybe the probability of intelligent aliens. So it's not been demonstrated at all anywhere, let alone on Earth. So I think the basis for speculation is definitely the fact that the universe seems to be sort of built for biology, if you like. So it's unlikely that life on Earth is the only example in the universe.
Yes, built for biology. That's a good term. Intelligent aliens, would there be ones who weren't?
Yeah, I think if you look at the history of life on Earth, it's our only example to go on. Then, there was life on Earth for 4 billion years before we got large creatures with brains like us or elephants or orcas or dolphins, pick your favorite smart mammal. So you can have life that's microbial for billions of years, and maybe you on some planets you never get to the intelligent stage.
Yes, in order to travel around the galaxy, you'd need to be relatively smart.
Right, and you don't need technology that's beyond ours, of course, because in 50 years of the space program, 60 years, we've only just, hopped off to the moon a few times, and that's not very far at all. So we're in the very early stages of space travel.
Yes, my use of the term relatively smart, really, that's underplaying it quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're extrapolating a lot, even to talk about the hypothetical aliens that could travel large distances between the stars.
You're based in Arizona, and America specifically is the home of UFO sightings. Why is that?
Well, I imagine it's got some cultural component. And I was sort of taken to task for using too strong wording in that article about the sightings cutting off at the Canadian-Mexican borders. They don't cut off, but the per capita reporting rate in the U.S. is very, very high. To make another example, Brazil has about the same population as the United States, but there's a small fraction of the UFO sightings. So good question. Why do aliens, if they're coming all this way, only appear to the Americans or mostly appear to the Americans?
And why?
And my answer to that, of course, is that it's probably a sign that a lot of the phenomena of UFO sightings is related more to psychology and wishful thinking and being slightly deluded by familiar things in the night sky, things that are familiar to astronomers but not to everyday observers. I mean, there's probably a core of UFO sightings that go beyond that, where people have seen apparently quite surprising things that persist. But astronomers are looking for physical evidence. They're looking for reproducible evidence, and that's really in short supply in this field.
Do you think Americans are more suggestible to the concept of UFOs and alien life?
Well, it got a very strong root, of course, in 1957 with the Roswell incident. So that pushed it into the popular culture. And that was, of course, at the dawn of the space age. So people were starting to look up. And also, if you plot the history of sightings in the United States, where they keep pretty good records, they're not random in time over the decades. They peak, interestingly, at the time of major events in the space program, like our first space probe to Mars in the 60s or landing on the moon in 68, 69. And obviously that's got nothing to do with seeing aliens. That's just people looking up and thinking of space and thinking of what might be out there. And so you can see that it's a sort of transference phenomena at that level.
A transference phenomena. What does that mean?
I mean, people are transferring their ideas, their imagination. Humans have got very rich imaginations into, what they think they see. And I'm not pretending that people are all delusional or they're making it up completely out of whole cloth, but it's very difficult to credit eyewitness events. In court proceedings, eyewitnesses are famously suspect when they've been like cross-checked by DNA evidence. You would never want to go to jail based on an eyewitness testimony because it's just quite likely to be wrong. And as I mentioned, in the sky, people are just not familiar with the night sky. When astronomers can pinpoint both the time and the direction in the sky of a UFO sighting, not all that information isn't usually there. But when it is there, a good hunk of the UFO sightings are Venus, the planet Venus.
Really? Why would that be?
Right. It sounds surprising, but maybe not. Venus is seen, it's quite close to the sun typically, so you see it just after sunset or just before sunrise. And when Venus is low on the horizon, first of all, it's very bright. It's the brightest night sky object, so people are usually surprised to see something that bright. They don't expect it. And when it's viewed in a low angle through a lot of the atmosphere, refraction effects can cause the image to split up or hover or appear to move, and that's just atmospheric phenomena seen at a low angle. And that would definitely might confuse people or make them think they're seeing something quite different.
Interestingly, though, last year there were a couple of extraterrestrial-related events that did have some level of credibility. In April last year, right when COVID-19 was becoming very serious, the Pentagon declassified three UFO videos that were taken by US Navy pilots. So what's your opinion about those sightings? Because you'd have to say that those pilots would be more in tune with what they're seeing.
Right. So those are higher credibility. So, I'm not going to issue a blanket statement that UFO sightings are all wrong or misleading or misled people. And yes, trained observers, military pilots, that's a higher level of credibility. But even they can be fooled. There's a very famous UFO sighting by an Air Force pilot where he saw a shiny metallic slender objects appearing to track the motion of his jet. Whatever violent maneuver he did, it just stayed off his wing, and it was uncanny. And he went into the clouds and came out, and it was still there. And he reported it as a UFO. This was decades ago. And when they were inspecting his plane back on the ground, a clever mechanic noticed that there was a little bubble, an elongated bubble in the canopy glass. And that was in his field of view, and he was literally looking at that and seeing it projected onto the background. So it was an incredibly mundane explanation for that UFO sighting for which he filed a report. Again, I can't use that to discount all these more recent examples, but it's a pretty good indication of how easy it is to get fooled.
Yes, and more recently, the former Israeli space security chief, he made quite a lot of claims, including that there is an agreement between the US government and aliens, and that Donald Trump knew about it or knows about it. What's your take on that?
Well, as soon as if the UFO sightings are things that an astronomer can investigate, I saw this in this part of the sky at this time and date, astronomers can weigh in on that because we know what's out there and we could maybe explain those. But a lot of the UFO sightings tinge into this area of conspiracy theories, and that the Israeli example is a perfect example. And I'm just not willing to go there. Basically, as a scientist, I'm willing to look at evidence, I'm willing to look at physical evidence, obviously, if that exists, even better. And it's in, again, amazingly short supply. If the aliens have been visiting for decades, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, where is the physical evidence? But as conspiracy theories, no, I just don't buy into those. I mean, it's too easy. It's too convenient. The military know and they're hiding it from us. The government knows and they're hiding it from us. I mean, look at the spectrum of conspiracy theories that we're inundated with in the modern world. And UFOs is just a piece of that kind of tapestry.
This guy, though, I think you pronounce it Haim Eshed, the Israeli gentleman. He is a professor like yourself, respected professor, retired general. So you'd think that his claims have a certain weight to them. So how were they received by the academic community then?
The academic community, there's a set of academics that have just consigned UFOs to the pseudoscience heap and just don't want to give it attention. It's just not, worthy of their time because it's so hard to get progress in this area. But there's a set of people who I'm sure are agnostic about some of the sightings who just say, well, that's interesting. We need more information. And so you could take the subset of sightings that are either verified by someone else or come from a credible source or an academic or a high-ranking government official, and then really pursue those in detail. And I think that's a good example of he's written a book and he's trying to sell books. So, okay, I'm not going to hold that against him, but let's hear more. Let's see more. And again, there's going to have to be a nice pile of evidence put there for anyone to believe the hypothesis, because it's a pretty outrageous hypothesis that aliens have traveled trillions of miles to the Earth and have visited us. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm just saying that, as Carl Sagan said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and we have not seen the extraordinary evidence yet, nor with this example.
You say in your article that people who spot UFOs tend to be dog walkers or smokers. But there's a reason that you say that. They're not necessarily smoking dope. They might just be outside.
Right. There are some people that are outdoors more often at the dusk time or beginning or end of the day when you can start to see objects in the night sky. So that's the case. You know, there were parts of my article that were a little tongue-in-cheek and a little ironic. And I have to say, from the nearly 400 comments that my article got, and I replied to a good many of them, that a sense of irony and a sense of humor is in rather short supply in this community, because I was taken to task for people who really didn't recognize irony when they saw it.
Well, I thought it was funny. So let's get it clear once and for all. As a professor of astronomy, what's your stance on the existence of alien life forms possible? Is that what you're saying?
As a professor of astronomy, I recognize that the universe is a big place. The galaxy is a big place. We found habitable Earth-like worlds throughout the galaxy, and it projects to millions of them through the galaxy. And any one of those could be a biological experiment. And if there's sufficient time, then those experiments could reach our state of technology or beyond. So it's not implausible a priori that there are intelligent aliens out there that could have technology to travel through space beyond what we have. And that's where I would stop. And then I would ask, if someone is going to claim that that's actually happened, first of all, we haven't shown that there are intelligent aliens out there in any way. We haven't inspected a distant planet and seen evidence of them. We haven't seen their communications through space, and we've been looking for half a century. So if they're just visiting us and appearing to us in various ways, then I will stay right on the fence until some pretty compelling evidence comes up that goes beyond a single eyewitness account or a photograph or an image. It's just got to be a pretty good heap of evidence. And again, physical evidence. Where is the physical evidence? That's what astronomers, that's what scientists would want. They want to study it in the lab. They want to be able to pass it around independent labs and say, oh yeah, this is something no human could have made, or this is a technology beyond our capability. Because almost by definition, these aliens have to be more advanced than us, since we cannot do what they're doing, traveling through the galaxy.
Yes, even going back to the Roswell incident, it being a military high-altitude balloon, that does make sense. But even as we're speaking now, makes sense to me, but even as we're speaking now, I imagine that we will be getting a lot of response about this, because it's something that people get very, very passionate about.
Right. And Roswell, I know Roswell was not as simple as that one sighting. There were a set of sightings. And it was indeed true that the military were testing, experimental aircraft. And we had rockets back then and the beginnings of the space program. So there were undoubtedly things that were secret that they weren't telling the public about. So I think there were multiple sightings and multiple incidents around that time and around that place. But again, it has staying power far beyond the evidence we have of what happened all that time ago. If this is a repeated situation where these are based on number of sightings worldwide, I mean, it must be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of sightings per year in the world. At some point, the best of those sightings has to lead to something more than just anecdotal evidence.
You quote Carl Sagan in the article a second time. You quote him as saying, it pays to keep an open mind, but not so open that your brains fall out.
Right. And scientists will want to follow, don't like to be seen as closed-minded, but also scientists have to follow the evidence, and they have to pursue fruitful hypotheses where you can confirm or deny it. And this has really not got to this category yet. Now, I've had much pushback on my article from people who clear, no, this video is convincing or this photo is convincing, but no video or photo is convincing. No single eyewitness account is convincing. You need a corroborated evidence. And again, it's tiresome to keep saying it, physical evidence. Why would it be so hard with tens or hundreds of thousands of sightings of this transitory phenomena to have true, repeatable, a study in the lab type evidence that you can look at? It's not happened yet.
And Chris, as an astronomer, there is an equation that you use. It's called the Drake equation, and it estimates the number of technological alien civilizations in our galaxy. Is that correct?
Yes, as even the founder or the inventor of that equation, Frank Drake, said, it's a container for ignorance more than a true equation, the way you'd have it in a math class. It's a set of factors that multiply together to guess, estimate the number of intelligent technological civilizations. But all the last three or four factors in that equation are completely unknown, starting with how often, if you have an Earth-like planet that's habitable, do you actually get life at all? We don't even know that factor, let alone how often, if you get life, does it get smart? How often, if the life gets smart, does it get technological? And so on. And then how long does it last in that state of the ability to travel through space? So the Drake equation doesn't really help us navigate this thicket of sightings, because it's not really predicting the number of civilizations out there. It's a framework for trying to estimate the number, and really we don't have enough information to do that.
With the limited information, though, how many civilizations might be in our galaxy? Is that number being decided on?
The number that is measured now by astronomers is the number of, by projection from the nearby parts of our galaxy, and the galaxy is pretty much the same set of stars doing the same things. So we can project to about 30 million Earth-like habitable worlds in the galaxy. That's a big number, and that is each one of those potentially could be a biological experiment. And that's all we can say with science or with astronomy. Everything beyond that, which, as I mentioned, with the history of the Earth, it took 4 billion years for you to get the most primitive microbial life developing intelligence of any kind. Maybe it takes longer. Maybe it doesn't happen most of the time. We simply don't know. So we're just talking about the raw materials for intelligent life, microbial life. And we haven't measured microbial life anywhere either. This is just the potential for it. So, people are getting ahead of themselves, if you like, by even talking about the number of intelligent civilizations. The Drake equation is unfortunate in a sense, because people use it in a mechanistic way as if it's going to predict something, but it doesn't really predict anything yet. We don't know enough for it to predict.
Well, sticking with evidence, the absence of evidence for intelligent aliens is called the Fermi paradox. What is that?
Right, it's called the Fermi paradox, and that's actually a misnomer, and philosophers have weighed in on this. It's not formally a paradox being sort of two contentions or hypotheses that conflict with each other. It's not a paradox because, as I mentioned, we don't know enough about intelligent life in the universe to say whether it is out there or not. So we can't have a paradox based on ignorance. What it is a good question. So the Fermi question is, where are they? And the Fermi question is based on this extrapolation of our situation to say, well, if there is life elsewhere, then there's been plenty of time for life elsewhere to get as advanced as us. And there might be a lot of life out there that's as advanced as us, or more so, so they can travel through the galaxy. And if you follow that chain of thought, then you might wonder, well, where are they if there are a lot of intelligent aliens out there? But it's a very hypothetical argument. As I mentioned, the ignorance of the Drake equation is pretty much absolute because we don't know enough of the terms. So you can choose to say that the Fermi question is a good question, or you can just choose to say, no, they're just very rare, or we're unique, or it's very hard for intelligence to evolve from microbes, or it's very hard for interstellar travel to be a capability of intelligent life forms, or you meant about 8 different ways why you can have life on planets without having intelligent aliens traveling through the galaxy.
If there were hypothetically aliens amongst us, which quite a few people do think that's the case, then There are reasons that those believers have come up with as to why they're not revealing themselves, aren't there? They're studying
Right.
us or whatever.
Yeah. And that's, you know, as a scientist, that just makes me amused all over again, because that's another form of a conspiracy theory, if you think about it. It's sort of you're hypothesizing something that you don't really have good evidence for, and then you're inventing a reason why we might not be able to prove that they exist, because they're concealing themselves, or the zoo hypothesis that they're out there and are watching us, or it just kind of falls apart logically. So I don't really have a lot of patience for those kind of arguments, because they still flounder for the same reason that the UFO hypothesis so far has floundered in general.
We do have a fascination, humanity, with alien life forms, don't we? Understandable.
Yeah. I mean, in one of the references in my article that also was mistaken by some people, I called UFOs a modern religion, a belief in UFOs a kind of modern religion. Well, if you remember your classic Spielberg movies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., in movies and in other forms of popular art and media, we've made literal representations of aliens into biblical stories. I mean, E.T. is a direct mapping of the Christ story with an alien. If you go, you can go through all the details of the scenes and the iconography. So Spielberg was a very smart movie maker, and he was keying into something, which is that we have elevated aliens to this high status of a modern religion, and we've invested them as a repository of our hopes and our fears and our dreams and our longings. It's a psychological phenomenon, or a spiritual phenomenon, if you like. And so I agree with that. I think he was onto something when he did that, and that's why those movies resonate.
Do you think there's any possibility, well, I think I know the answer to this because you'd need the proof, but that we could encounter UFOs in the next few generations?
It's always possible. So there are a set of astronomers, radio astronomers and optical astronomers who have been patiently listening for signals from intelligent civilizations, you know, pulsed radio messages or pulsed optical messages. And they've been doing it steadily for decades, and they haven't heard anything or seen signals that they would attribute to intelligence yet. But they're continuing to do that they might succeed at some point. Now, that's not visitation. That's just them remotely measuring the existence of some intelligent entity in a civilization on a distant star. So that experiment could succeed at any time, but it's been going for over half a century and it hasn't succeeded so far. Could one of the, you know, the dozens, the hundreds or thousands of UFO sightings a year turn into a real crash landing of a UFO where we actually get to see them up close when they go into quarantine and we sequester the spacecraft and study it in detail? Yes, sure, it could happen. I'm not holding my breath. I'm not going to, you know, stop doing the other things I plan to do as a scientist waiting for it, though.
As an astronomer, is there anything that you've seen that you haven't been able to find an explanation for?
Not yet. And I've seen some strange, I look up a lot, not just when I'm using a telescope, but just, you know, just watch the sky whenever I'm out. And, you know, I've seen things occasionally that are confusing to me that, you know, not as dramatic as a UFO streaking across the sky or swooping down or shining light or something. But I've seen things that I didn't immediately know what they were. And I've just sort of lodged them in the back of the mind, made a little mental note of where I saw them and when. And almost every time I've been able to attribute it to, like, oh, that was the International Space Station, or oh, that was just a meteor shower or something. And there are probably a handful of times when I couldn't attribute it to anything. But I didn't, therefore, jump to a conclusion. So scientists are not supposed to jump to conclusions. And it's okay to have some things that you don't know what they are. And, you know, unless it's as dramatic as an abduction, and don't get me started on that.
Oh, no, please, please give us an abduction opinion.
Alien abduction claims have been studied by psychologists, psychiatrists, sociologists, and it's a small but rich literature. And, you know, I would never want to deny someone's claimed personal experience, so I'm not going to go there, basically. But I will say that a number of these cases have been studied, and it's a meaningful contribution to the psychological literature rather than the scientific literature.
Enough said. Well, I'm just going to ask you to jump to a conclusion to conclude, and that is, if an alien did present itself to you, what is it that you would hope that they would be bringing to Earth?
Well, I have probably a slightly annoying or frustrating answer to that question. I think we are so guilty of anthropocentric thinking. We so project our values, our history, our physical appearance onto the alien, that I think the most likely scenario is that alien intelligences or technologies might be unrecognizable or you know, just opaque to us. Why should they be understandable? Why should they be recognizable? Why should they be similar to us in any way whatsoever? Their modes of transport, their modes of communication, their physical appearance. So I actually think that the truth is far stranger than the UFO sightings that I read about.
We have tried, though, in Star Wars and various other depictions of what we think an alien is like, unlike the human form.
I love those shows. I grew up on those shows, but they're hopelessly anthropocentric. I mean, the idea of aliens in those shows are just sort of humanoids with really bad skin conditions and funny hair and funny costumes, you know. They're just not, it's not imaginative enough, to be honest.
And on that note, thank you very, very much for joining us this morning. Great conversation.
Okay, it was a pleasure.
That's Chris Impey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy from the University of Arizona.